I've had so many clients where because they don't have cysts on their ovaries, the doctor's like, no, you don't have PCOS, but they fit at least two, sometimes three out of the three of the criteria.
In the conventional world, people think of it as a hormonal issue, but with our approach, we really view this as a metabolic disorder.
PCOS is so much deeper than just hormones. There's all these other systems in the body that are going to work together.
Many women with PCOS also have a sluggish thyroid. That's going to impact your stomach acid production. That'll also impact your absorption of nutrients. We need a healthy thyroid and optimal amounts of thyroid hormone to ovulate and have healthy, regular ovulatory cycles.
We don't jump to hormone testing with any of our clients, but especially the PCOS population. What we like to do is to look at minerals and the gut microbiome, which are two huge key factors.
That also makes me think of another mineral with PCOS. It's like the best mineral that exists.
Welcome to the Hormone Healing RD podcast, where you'll get clear, practical guidance for your healing journey. I'm Amanda Montalvo, women's health dietitian and mineral expert. After helping thousands of women and navigating my own healing, I know how overwhelming the wellness world can be. This show cuts through the noise with simple, research-backed insights on hormones, minerals, and what your body truly needs to heal. In this episode, I'm actually co-hosting it with one of my dietitians that works on my nutrition team, Ava. She's amazing and she works with a ton of PCOS clients. So she was the perfect person for me to do this episode with. There's two main areas we hone in on. One is just all the different areas that we focus on for women with PCOS when we work with them. There's such a spectrum to it. I think we try to fit women with PCOS into these little boxes, but it's so much more nuanced than that. So we dive into all those areas. And then the last half of the podcast is focusing on pro-metabolic. And, you know, we have so much praise for pro-metabolic and the movement in general, but then we go into a little bit more nuance with just like the issues we've seen with clients, especially clients that have PCOS that are trying to implement pro-metabolic principles and why it's not working for them. They just come very frustrated. So we get into all the nuance there, which I'm hoping will be really helpful because this is probably one of the top things that I get asked about now between my course students, women in my community, in this community, and in my Instagram community. So it's a question I'm like, there's so much more nuance than I can get into with like a quick response, which is why we made this episode. And don't worry, I have Amaya with me for this intro because she was not having it and I had to finish the bonus episode and grab her, but she's not with me the whole episode, but hopefully you enjoy seeing her here now that she's happy. But that's the episode. I hope you enjoy it in my conversation with Ava. Oh, thank you so much for being here, Ava. I am very excited to cover this topic today, something we've been talking about for like a few months now. I feel like we've been going back and forth, sending voice messages as we do, just to have this as a resource for the community, of course, our podcast community, and then also for our one-on-one clients, because we're really going to be getting into a theme we just see over and over with PCOS. So that's going to be very fun. Before we dig into that, because you're new to the podcast, although you've been on my one-on-one team for almost 2 years now, which is crazy. Can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself? What brought you to wanting to focus on women's health?
Yeah, I feel like my own, and first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here. I feel like most of us practitioners have our own healing journey that led us to this work and really lights that fire under us to do what we do for other women. But my journey is it's not really unique. I felt like I was doing all the right things when it came to my health. I was eating whole foods, working out every day, going to doctors, got into health and wellness at such a young age. But like many people, I still didn't feel well. And so when I was in the depths of my own journey, dealing with lingering symptoms, blood sugar imbalances, which we'll talk a lot about today, I'm sure, fatigue, brain fog, you know, parasites, hormone issues, gut issues. And I kept getting told that everything looked normal. And, you know, I had my PCP told me it was just due to stress, so many of my issues. And it wasn't until I found a functional approach and really started digging into this side of health that I found the answers that I was looking for. And this is, you know, during my entire journey of being in this space too, which I know is very common with functional practitioners. It's like we're learning the things that are supposed to help us feel good and we're doing all the quote unquote right things, but it's still not moving the needle. So that is how I found my way into the world of integrative and functional nutrition. And, you know, I did the whole thing where I had studied nutrition undergrad, went to grad school, you know, got my RD license, got all my hours. But it wasn't until I got additional training in functional and integrative nutrition that everything kind of clicked. And that's the approach that makes me so passionate to get up and do what I do and heal or help other women heal. And so I really realized that like healing is not just about chasing symptoms, which, you know, that's a big thing I'm sure going to talk about today, or fixing isolated parts of the body. It's kind of like taking that well-rounded approach and understanding how everything connects. And that is what I am just so grateful I get to teach about and help women do, and so grateful that I get to be on your amazing team to help our client population do that.
Yeah, we have the best team. And I'm like, I know it's my team, but like, we just have really good practitioners. You guys are all so smart. And I feel like everyone's just so nice and normal, which I love. You know, sometimes you work with a practitioner and sometimes it's like, you're like, they're so intelligent, but it's like something is missing. Like there's like a missing piece of like, it's not gelling with like making it practical and bringing it to life. And like, how am I actually going to apply this information? Like, how do you make it real for a person? And I feel like that's what you guys are all really good at. And I'm very lucky to have all of you on my team. You've definitely, you and Aaron are up there with being with me for the longest. And it's just been so fun. And this is a topic, like, I know we have a lot of women that we work with PCOS, and it's not always the main concern. Like I would say a lot of the times it's kind of like, I have this diagnosis and then I have this slew of symptoms as well. And some of them fall under that umbrella and like some of them don't, but it's a huge population that we work with. It's one of my favorites to work with, especially for minerals specifically, because I see the biggest changes probably the quickest with this population of like women really like struggling with longer cycles and things like that, insulin resistance. And then once they dig into like the mineral piece, it's like everything clicks and they can see changes fast. So I'm always like, yes, this is very fun population to work with. And I'm curious, I think maybe we just start with like defining what PCOS is, and then we'll get into kind of how we define it with our clients and talk about the spectrum and the root causes. So do you want to go through what defines PCOS? How can a woman know if she in fact does have PCOS?
Yeah. So if you know, you're listening and you don't even know what PCOS stands for, which is totally normal, it's a polycystic ovarian syndrome. And it's a hormone. I mean, I think in the conventional world, people think of it as a hormonal issue. But with our approach, we really view this as a metabolic disorder. It's not just about, you know, your ovaries and having cysts on your ovaries. And you don't actually even have to have cysts on your ovaries to be diagnosed with PCOS. In terms of, you know, how you know you have PCOS, you know, there's the Rotterdam criteria, which you have to have two out of these three criteria to be diagnosed in, you know, the conventional world. But we have a lot of women, I will say, who they've never actually been diagnosed. They just kind of suspect they have PCOS, and it doesn't really change the way that I treat them or, you know, the way that I would approach their case. So that's also something to know, is that you don't have to have the diagnosis for this information to be applicable to you or helpful for you. So one of the criteria is having delayed ovulation or, you know, and ovulatory cycles, or this would also be known as the symptom of having irregular, longer menstrual cycles. So typically they want to see less than 10 cycles a year, or cycles that are 35 or more days. Again, I feel like sometimes this one is, I don't know, I've had a few clients I can think of who have like 35 day cycles and they are ovulating and they're having consistent 35 day cycles. I wouldn't necessarily use that as something to, you know, tell me that they have PCOS. But again, there's nuance with everything. And that's just one of the criteria. The other one is high androgens. And this is one that I think a lot of people will use when they aren't diagnosed to kind of, you know, if they come to us and they're like, I think I have PCOS, you know, I have the hirsutism, I have a lot of hair loss, you know, like on the hair on my head. So hirsutism is when you have hair growing where as a woman, you don't necessarily want it to be growing. So upper lip hair, chin hair, nipple hair, hair on your belly, places like that. And then a lot of hair loss, you know, on your head. Acne is another sign of high androgens. And we're talking, you know, testosterone, DHEA, dihydrotestosterone, or even just the symptoms of that. You don't necessarily have to get the blood work to know that you have high androgens. It could just be some of those symptoms. Again, nuance there though, too, because I've had clients who have a lot of, you know, they're just like, I'll give myself as an example. I'm from Iran, I'm Persian, and I just naturally have a lot of body hair, but I wouldn't necessarily use that, you know, if I didn't have any other symptoms of PCOS, I wouldn't necessarily call that hirsutism. I would just say that's just my genetics. And I know I've had that question too of like, I have a lot of hair, but like, I feel like everything else is normal. I'm like, that's just probably, you know, your body. It's okay. You don't necessarily have high androgens if you have a lot of body hair. And then cysts on your ovaries is one of the criteria. So that's where you would get an ultrasound and your doctor would be able to tell you if you have those. You can't necessarily tell without that. But those are the three. You need two out of the three to be diagnosed. And again, a lot of women that we work with, they don't necessarily have the diagnosis, but we would still address these root causes that we're going to be talking about today with them.
Yeah. And it's, and that could be something too, where if you're like, I want to talk with my doctor about this, it's Rotterdam criteria. That's what you would want to be asking them about. Cause I've had so many clients where because they don't have cysts on their ovaries, the doctor's like, no, you don't have PCOS, but they fit at least two, sometimes three out of the three of the criteria. And it's like, oh, and again, we don't, is the diagnosis going to change anything? Maybe not, but I just think it's helpful to be conscious of, because what we're going to go through now is how we view PCOS in our clients is how it's more of a spectrum, because there's different possible root causes. And like, I think of like Laura Bryden, you know, like the kind of old school women, which is like, is it old school? What is it, like 8 years ago or something? Her period repair manual. And that's like the main one I think of. And there's a couple books on PCOS that I've read where it puts them into like three or four categories, where it's like insulin resistance. Basically, it goes through your root cause, where it's like insulin resistance can be one root cause. And like, that's why, that's what's driving all of your PCOS symptoms, or lean PCOS, they call it, with like stress hormones being the main cause. And then inflammatory PCOS, which is just like inflammation, which I'm kind of like, none of those happen separately. You know, they don't happen separately. So the way that we view it is that PCOS is really a spectrum. And most of our, I've never had a client that only had one of those factors ever. Because when it comes to women with PCOS, there are certain things that are typically more common that you'll see, like inflammation, for example. A ton of women with PCOS have this like chronic low-grade inflammation, and it's a combination of things. It's not, is usually some insulin resistance, could be a little bit, could be a lot. It's also can go back to their gut microbiome, because typically women with PCOS, they're much more likely to have more not so great bacteria and low beneficial strains of bacteria, which can cause some inflammation and imbalances in the gut and immune system. And then stress hormones, typically women with PCOS have higher stress hormone levels. But again, like, is that because they have more blood sugar imbalances and have inflammation in the gut? So it's kind of, it's just like, you want to keep in mind that it's never just one thing. And I think that really throws a lot of women off that are like trying to do research, understand what their root cause is. I'm like, you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to put yourself in a category. It's so much deeper than that. And then even from there, there's underlying root causes of each one. So I think it could be helpful to get into that now.
Absolutely. And I, with any condition or any client we see, I know everyone's so excited to like learn their root causes, but there's never just one with anyone. There's never one root cause of one thing. It's, nothing exists in a vacuum. So I'm happy you said that. So in terms of the areas of concern, we kind of discussed that it's a metabolic disorder. And so the first thing I think of is, of course, and we talked about this, insulin resistance. That is one of the most, you know, it's the biggest, one of the biggest features of PCOS. And I think that everyone I've worked with PCOS has some level of insulin resistance. I don't know if you would agree with that, Amanda.
I do. Even like my clients that are leaner or even underweight that have PCOS, I still think they have insulin resistance. Yeah,
absolutely. And basically what that means, and I think you have a whole separate episode on blood sugar on the podcast. So if people want to learn more about that, they should definitely listen to just get more of the basics down. But insulin resistance is basically when our body's cells don't respond properly to insulin. And so that essentially will force your pancreas to need to pump more insulin out to get that signal to the cell that there's glucose that we need to bring down in the blood after you eat. And so that insulin is going to stimulate cells in the ovary to produce more androgens. And that's why when we talked about these different root causes kind of affecting one another, high insulin is going to affect our hormones and vice versa. But high insulin will also reduce certain hormones like sex hormone binding globulin, and that's going to increase free testosterone. So again, why we get some of those high androgens when there's insulin resistance. But aside from the hormonal aspect of things, insulin resistance is an inflammatory condition or phenomenon that's happening in the body. And so that's going to be contributing to that low-grade inflammation that you were talking about earlier as well. And so blood sugar and being really mindful of blood sugar balance and leptin regulation is going to be so important for kind of addressing that insulin resistance. And I know we're going to talk about minerals too, which are so important for insulin resistance and a big kind of area that just doesn't get looked at a ton. Even with, you know, our clients who have come to us working with other functional practitioners in the past, that's something that often hasn't been explored deeply and makes a huge difference with our clients, I feel like. So that insulin resistance can lead to some of those hormonal imbalances. It can lead to or contribute to some of those other factors that affect PCOS, like anovulation, like acne, because again, that inflammation might show up in the skin, like hirsutism because of the hormonal effects and irregular cycles too. So kind of like we were talking about, these are all symptoms. And even though all these different aspects are, they're normally seen as causes, but the bigger question is why? Like what's happening upstream of these different imbalances of the insulin resistance, of the inflammation to cause these symptoms and the syndrome in the first place? And that's really what we do with our PCOS clients. But did you want to add anything to that on the insulin resistance piece?
No, I feel like that covers it. And then, and even just knowing that like these are all layered together, right? And I also think the gut does not get any airtime. When it comes to PCOS, I'm like, I mean, it's always, I want to do a hormone test, which I understand. Like I 100% understand why women are like, I want to test my hormones. And I want to they want to look at hemoglobin A1C, which we do like to see that's going to give us an idea of like, is there a significant amount of insulin resistance present right now? And then we're always like, okay, but if we look at your sex hormones, it's not going to tell us why. It's just going to show us probably that your androgens are high. You could have high or low estrogen. We see both. And that progesterone's probably really low. Right? And we could probably predict these. So the reason that we don't jump to hormone testing with any of our clients, but especially the PCOS population, is because we could probably guess what's currently happening and it doesn't tell us the why. And so what we like to do is to look at minerals and the gut microbiome, which are two huge key factors that are going to affect all the different areas, the metabolic issues, insulin resistance. And insulin is just, it's minerals and it's also your gut microbiome. And with women with PCOS, dysbiosis, just having an imbalance in good and bad bacteria, incredibly common, not making enough digestive juices, like not really like lower stomach acid production, lower digestive enzyme production, also very common. I also had so many clients with PCOS have their gallbladder removed. I'm sure you have too.
Or just gallbladder issues, some sort of, you know, inflammation there.
For sure. Or like history of gallbladder attacks, constipation, which is a huge sign of gallbladder issues. Things like that. Like they're just not making enough digestive juices. You don't break down your food well. And then that leads to a host of issues in the gut, especially over time. And then you can have not enough of certain beneficial bacteria like Acromantia. That is one that's typically low Yeah. And women with PCOS. And this is, it's like, in, it's important for your gut barrier. It's important for reducing inflammation in the gut. It helps improve insulin sensitivity. It also supports healthy weight and good metabolism. It's incredibly, it's essential. And it's one of those things that we often see is either very low or not even detectable on a stool test when we're working with clients that have PCOS and other things as well, of course. But it's like, it's like we know it. You read the research, you see women PCOS typically have all these things going on. But when you see it over and over and over on lab tests, it's like, okay, this is like actually a concern. And typically, you know, they don't, having low beneficials, they're also not going to be making enough short chain fatty acids, which is huge for reducing inflammation and having a good environment in the gut. And then we often see lots of overgrowth, which can lead to things like SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and then histamine issues, which, I mean, I know so many people have histamine issues now post-COVID. It's just been such a problem. And it's really like exacerbated a lot of things people kind of already had going on in the past. And then all of these things mixed together, like I just think of progesterone, like so many of our clients PCOS, like they just have this huge imbalance in estrogen, progesterone. There's almost always a thyroid component, which we're also going to talk about. And they're like, how can I improve this? Right? Like, how do I'm like, if you have inflammation in your gut, you're going to be using the progesterone that you are making when you do ovulate, or maybe they're ovulating regularly, but it's not like a strong ovulation. You're going to be using all of that for your gut because your body is going to prioritize the area of inflammation over things like minimizing other symptoms that you might have and feeling good in your mood and feeling balanced and like a good stress response and all those things. So the gut microbiome is definitely a huge piece of the puzzle. Like, we'll talk about minerals. I think those are foundational, but I do think that it's like insulin resistance is like the, it gets all the attention and like the gut just gets nothing.
Absolutely. And it affects insulin sensitivity too. Like you talked about low short chain fatty acids. When you have low beneficial bacteria, which is something I see time and time again on the, you know, stool tests of my clients with PCOS, you're not going to be producing enough short chain fatty acids like butyrate. And that's going to impair your insulin sensitivity too, which essentially means how sensitive your cells are to insulin. You're going to need more insulin to get that signal to knock on the door of the cell and actually be able to regulate your blood glucose levels. So I think it's a really big missing piece. And when there's inflammation in the gut, you know, that's going to impact other systems in the body too. I also often will see, speaking of the gut microbiome, elevated levels of beta-glucuronidase in my PCOS clients as well. And you mentioned the thyroid piece and, you know, the gallbladder aspect of things too. So constipation, poor bile flow is what I think of. And that's going to impact how we recirculate recirculate estrogen, how we detoxify and recirculate estrogen rather. So when you have elevated levels of this enzyme, that shows me that someone is probably packaging up estrogen into a more toxic form and recirculating that in the body because of poor bile flow. And so that's where like the inflammation support, the stomach acid support, the bile support becomes really important with these clients too, so that they're detoxing estrogen properly as well. Because sometimes they don't, you know, clients with PCOS don't always have high estrogen. They just might not have enough progesterone to oppose all the estrogen. And they just might have more toxic forms of estrogen circulating too.
I've never, and like even for my own like health journey, it's like I definitely had high estrogen, but it was like, I did not detox it well. So it's like, even if I was trying so hard to get my estrogen down, but it's like, it wouldn't have mattered because I wasn't detoxing it well anyway. So I would still probably have all the same symptoms. So that's just kind of like an overview to hopefully help you better understand the view of like, okay, PCOS is so much deeper than just hormones. There's all these other systems in the body that are going to work together. Nothing happens in isolation. I think I say that every podcast episode. And then it's funny because all these areas then affect your mineral status and minerals affect our metabolism. So I get a lot of flack online whenever I say that PCOS is a metabolic disorder. I get people very upset. That's like, it's a hormone disorder. And I'm like, it affects our hormones, but it's like, ultimately think about all the systems involved. I mean, yes, your hormones are one of them, but like your gut microbiome, balancing blood sugar, nutrient status is a huge one. Just layers upon layers, like that can't just be a hormone issue. You know, it's everything. So one of the big things with PCOS that I often see is that they have very low minerals. There's different patterns, but low minerals across the board is the most common one. And a lot of that has to do with insulin resistance. And this is another kind of, for me, like, you know, I've been doing this for a decade and it's a part of my own health history. So it's a little different when you're like, I've done a lot of self-experimentation and testing as well. And the more insulin resistant you are, even if you're lower on the spectrum, maybe you have some insulin resistance, but you're not like at it as extreme, you are still going to have more mineral loss in the urine. So you're using up more minerals and then you're losing more in the urine. You're also using up more when you're inflamed, like zinc, you know, zinc, just like progesterone, zinc's going to get used up like crazy. And you're much more likely to have imbalances in other minerals, especially when your stress hormones are higher. So you're going to be using up more sodium and potassium. And then eventually that drives up, that leads to like that soft tissue calcium release. And we'll typically see high calcium on a hair test and high magnesium. And then the metabolism slows down. But then unless you know what to do to correct this and you're addressing those other root causes, the mineral loss continues. Then you get depleted. This is typically where we see people is like they're in that more depleted state and their minerals and their hair tests are like low across the board. And they're often a fast four, which is like the end stage of stress. Like you're in adrenal burnout. And I think a lot of our clients would agree with that and describe themselves as like completely burnt out. And this is so many minerals impact blood sugar balancing as well. So then you're kind of like, I'm making all the right food changes. I'm super low carb, maybe. Or they're like, I tried lowering my calorie intake and working out more, and they're trying to compensate, but no matter what they do, it's not working. And so much of it is the fact that they are deficient and that the other systems of their body aren't working properly. So it's like when you can address everything together, that's when everything starts to come back online. Things start working correctly, especially with minerals, because they are like little helpers in the body. They make all these processes happen. Like I interviewed Dr. Nina Marie Rueda, and her interview will come out before this. So you guys, if you've listened to every episode, you've heard her. And she had the best analogy for minerals, and that she's like, it's like when you go to a concert and how the minerals are like the backstage crew that like make the concert happen, because none of it would happen without it. And I was like, oh, that's truly the best way to describe it. And your body will compensate and it'll try to keep these processes going. That's when heavy metals often come into play, where they'll take the place of certain minerals, but they can't compensate forever. And then the systems just start to get dysfunctional. And then a lot of PCOS symptoms get worse. Plus, they'll be like, I have all these other random symptoms that I don't think have anything to do with my PCOS going on as well too. And I would love to know like other minerals that you often see, like zinc, you know, is high or low. What other minerals are you often seeing on hair tests for clients that are worsening those PCOS symptoms?
Well, I think you did a great job of explaining why so many of our clients with PCOS are depleted, but there's one mineral I think of that usually isn't depleted in our PCOS clients. It's actually too high usually, and that's iron. And it's hard to just look at a hair test and get a good view of what's actually happening with iron in the body. So I always recommend kind of comparing that to blood work, ideally getting a full iron panel, and ideally also getting some cofactors there too, looking at what copper is doing in the blood, zinc, vitamin A, magnesium, just so we're getting like a really full picture. But iron is usually, I typically see iron overload or excess iron with PCOS clients. And that's typically because there's a protein in the liver that regulates iron absorption. It's called hepcidin. And a lot of PCOS, I would say most clients with PCOS don't have enough hepcidin, that it gets reduced. And hepcidin and iron are kind of, you know, when one goes up, the other goes down. And so as hepcidin goes down, iron absorption goes up. So your body doesn't get the signal that, hey, like we have enough iron. Iron levels are already high in the body. And so that hepcidin won't be able to block more iron absorption as it should. And then iron levels get even higher. And that contributes a ton to the inflammation that, you know, our clients with PCOS have, because high iron is really inflammatory. And, you know, the other aspect of iron being high, aside from hepcidin, is you know, a lot of women with PCOS have very irregular cycles, very long cycles. So they're not bleeding regularly either. I also, a lot of my clients with PCOS have light cycles. Some have short cycles too, but more so they have light bleeds. So they're not bleeding enough. And then they're also not bleeding a big amount when they do bleed. And so that's another kind of aspect of the high iron piece with PCOS clients. I don't always see excess iron, but I see it more often than not.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big one.
It's enough to be like for me, it's enough for me to recommend that women with PCOS regularly get their iron tested, because then the gut issues too, like iron feeds pathogens and yeast. And so it's one of those things where it's like, if that is elevated, it's not just going to affect your kind of like hormonal symptoms. It's also going to affect your gut issues. And like we said, a lot of women with PCOS already have imbalances in their gut. So it's definitely a huge piece of the puzzle. And again, like sometimes I see clients that have PCOS that have very low iron, which, you know, I've seen like PCOS supplements, you know, recommended supplement lines and stuff that have iron in them. And I'm just like, I get it. Like, and I think it can be good and sometimes easy to be like, I'm going to follow this PCOS protocol. It's like for women in PCOS, but like, this is why I don't recommend doing that, because there's every person's going to be different. There's so much nuance. It's like, just do your own testing if you can, because that ultimately, then you're going to know what I need, what I don't need, and you're not going to cause more issues. Because the amount of women that I've seen come to me taking iron that have PCOS, I'm like, this is a problem.
It's wild. And to your point with the gut issues too, like exactly, iron feeds pathogens, and we could try to get rid of those pathogens or, you know, improve the balance of bacteria in your gut. But if you still have high iron while we're doing that, it's not really going to stick probably, because that iron's just going to feed the overgrowth even more. And the other thing with the gut issues that I forgot to mention when we were talking about the gut aspect is that you don't have to have gut symptoms. You don't have to have like digestive issues to have imbalances in your gut. And I just started working with a client who has PCOS, and she didn't have really overt gut symptoms, like a little bit of gas here and there, but nothing crazy. But she knew from, like, you know, going through the course, going through your content on PCOS, that like, I knew that I needed to do a stool test because I had PCOS and there was probably something deeper going on, even though it didn't feel like it. And I thought that was so smart of her to do. And so, you know, smart of you to say to people too, because that aspect often gets overlooked.
If you are feeling off, exhausted, or just stuck with your hormones and your health in general, and you're like, I do not know where to begin, the wellness world is so overwhelming. I completely understand. You've probably heard me talk about minerals a million times. They are truly foundational for hormones, thyroid, metabolism, overall health, but knowing how to support them is typically where most people get stuck. Like, they know they're important, but they're like, what do I do? This is why I created my Mineral Starter Guide. It's a free, jam-packed resource that walks you through the basics of minerals, how they become depleted, how they affect our hormones, how to get them tested, and then how to actually start rebalancing them. I go through 5 very simple steps you can do without any testing. And you can grab your free copy of this by clicking the link in the show notes, or you can find me on Instagram at HormoneHealingRD and DM me Mineral Guide, and I'll send it right to you. Yeah, it's just one of those other symptoms. If you're like, what other symptoms might I have that are not overt digestive issues that could be signs, like the mental, emotional, I mean, mental health concerns, huge. I think that's a huge part of it, because there's like research out there for women PCOS that they like, they're more likely to deal with anxiety and depression. I mean, you're also like, it's like 10 to 25% of women with PCOS have thyroid issues, which can also very greatly contribute to mental health concerns. But so can gut imbalances. I mean, so many of our neurotransmitters are made in our gut, and inflammation in the gut doesn't just stay there. That inflammation can also go to the brain. So I think that that is a huge, huge factor and something to consider as well. And it's just really common. Sleep issues can be a really big one that can be a sign as well. Anything with the skin, anything, acne, eczema, psoriasis, anything with the skin is like screaming gut for sure. And I also think even like if you have like the hormone concerns, like PMS, any like ovulation pain, a lot of our clients PCOS, like they also have other health concerns too. Like maybe they all like other co-conditions, like maybe they have histamine issues, or maybe they also have PMDD, endometriosis. Like we definitely see a lot of those kind of side by side. And obviously they can kind of weave in together. Are there any other things that you can think of that could be signs for gut issues that aren't gut symptoms?
I think you covered most of it. I see a lot of brain fog that improves drastically with, you know, working on the gut. And then hair loss is another one that I see a lot that also improves, just because that inflammation, like you said, it doesn't just stay in the gut. It'll affect so many different systems. And if your gut, to your point with the thyroid dysfunction too, A, if there's a thyroid issue also going on, which, like you said, many women with PCOS also have a sluggish thyroid, that's going to impact your stomach acid production. That's going to affect bile flow, all the things, but also, and so that'll make you more likely to have overgrowth start to form in the gut, but that'll also impact your absorption of nutrients. And so that can affect any system, really. So I see hair loss as well with that, which can be a factor due to the hormonal imbalances that happen because of all of what we're talking about. But I think it can also just be, like, I've seen a lot of clients without having high androgens, or even just non-PCOS clients. This conversation aside, hair loss is a big symptom we see, and gut imbalances contribute to it a lot.
For sure. And even when it comes to thyroid, it's like, I mean, I think there's also a very high population of PCOS thyroid disorders, but also Hashimoto's specifically. And then it's like, okay, well, this is not, this makes sense to me because of the gut imbalances are already present. Stress hormones are already higher. And those two things together are a recipe for an autoimmune condition to occur. And so it would make sense that then that is like primarily more like thyroid focus. So, I mean, definitely not everyone, but I would say that I see that combination a lot. And it was so much so, especially in the beginning of my career, that I was like, what's going on here? Like, what's this like deeper connection? And that's when I was like, oh, okay. So I need to be making sure that pretty much everyone that I work with that has PCOS doesn't also have some sort of thyroid dysfunction or Hashimoto specifically. And I'm always recommending to get your thyroid antibody. If you think, if you're like, yeah, I have hypothyroidism, but they've never tested your antibodies, that's when it's really, really important, because it would make sense given all the other things happening in the body.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, supporting your gut's immune system is going to be huge. And those clients typically have also low secretory IgA in their stool tests. And so again, all connected. And that thyroid piece is so important too, because we need a healthy thyroid and optimal amounts of thyroid hormone to ovulate and have healthy, regular ovulatory cycles. And that also makes me think of another mineral with PCOS, iodine, which I know you've already done 2 podcast episodes on iodine. So if people are interested, it's like the best mineral that exists. One of my favorite ones, but that is a big piece too. Eventually with our PCOS clients is really optimizing their thyroid health and their iodine status too.
Yeah. I know. We'll link those in the show notes for sure. There's a lot of nuance there. And I talk about that in there with like, what do you do if you have an autoimmune condition? And that's like, we should definitely do a Hashimoto's episode for sure. That would be a fun one. But those are like the major areas that we're focusing on. The metabolism, of course, the gut microbiome, insulin resistance, and kind of figuring out where does this person kind of lie on that insulin resistance scale, you know? And sometimes we have labs for that, but honestly, a lot of it, we're just trying to figure out how are they living, eating, how are they responding to that? What's in, like, how do they feel? All their symptoms. Labs are helpful, but you're not a lab value. And I think that's a very important takeaway and something that I really try to stress to women in PCOS, because it's very easy to be like, I feel like a lot of them, like they are like that type A, like they want to know exactly what's out of balance, why it's out of balance, what's causing it, what's the driver, and exactly what to do, which is helpful. We want you to know what to do, but it's what is going to work for you is going to be unique to you, because not everyone with PCOS is the same amount of insulin resistant or has the same background and can tolerate different, like the same exact food. Like there's no perfect PCOS meal plan protocol, like supplement protocol. It doesn't exist, because each woman is going to be completely unique. And then inflammation, of course, and then in minerals. And minerals are, it's the iron component, because iron overload is very common. And when it comes to that, like we definitely have some of our clients do blood donations. It's not the first thing that we do, because again, like we said, a lot of them are depleted, very low mineral status. So they're not even in a place to think about donating blood. Because when you donate blood, you lose a lot of sodium. And so it can tank your adrenals even more. And so that's where we're figuring out, okay, are you taking any supplements that have iron? Let's stop those. And then we do often use nutrients that will bind to iron at meals to lower their iron status that way. Because we have plenty of clients that will probably never be a good candidate for a blood donation if they have like POTS or histamine issues, you know? So there's other ways, but that is a big part of the mineral piece that we address. And then just seeing like, how depleted are you? What's out of balance? I definitely see a lot of PCOS clients with really high calcium too, on calcium shells that slows your metabolism down and hugely affects your thyroid and how you're using thyroid hormone. So that's like a big piece of the puzzle. Hair test, iron labs. And then the biggest way that we address minerals is we look at, how are you living? What does your typical day look like? Are you always rushing? Are you always stressed? Your food intake, are you eating enough? How frequently are you eating? All those things. And this kind of brings us to our next topic, which I think we should just get into the prometabolic piece because we're going to run out of time.
I agree.
And we were going to talk about myths of PCOS, but I have already kind of talked about those. I have old PCOS episodes that I did with Emily like a million years ago. So I think that like you guys can definitely reference those too. But a big topic that we wanted to talk about is this is like a theme we see with our clients, obviously them trying to figure out what's my root cause. And then also, hey, I started following the pro-metabolic diet and some women it's like life-changing for, and we'll talk about who we think it's really helpful for. And then we also, I would say like the biggest population we work with is women that were already overweight to begin with that have PCOS. They try to implement pro-metabolic principles and then they sometimes see progress in some areas. But other areas, they're like, I'm completely stuck and it's like getting worse. So do we want to talk about what pro-metabolic is? And then we're going to talk about what it's not. So do you want to get into what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure your audience is familiar. Most women in your audience are familiar with the pro-metabolic world. And at its core, pro-metabolic is a really, you know, nourishing approach to taking care of yourself and nourishing the body so it feels safe rather than restricting. And it really helps women, in my opinion. Like a lot of our clients who have come to us from this place, they're not afraid to eat anymore, which kind of to my point earlier with my own story, like that was a big thing I had to learn when I was really young, is to not be afraid to eat, because the rhetoric we've been given, especially women in the age ranges that we see, it's like skinny is better, less food means you're going to be healthier, all those crazy things that we learned growing up. So pro-metabolic is really about like supporting, like we were talking about earlier with stress, our resilience to stress, supporting the nervous system, our adrenals, supporting, you know, our hormones so that we can have regular ovulatory cycles. So giving the body those safety signals of like, you're safe, you're nourished, we have enough food, you like have enough to actually ovulate and really be a fertile body, which that's really a marker that I view of health, fertility. It's like, it's not just the ability to have a baby. Even if you don't want to have a baby, it's you want to be living in a fertile body, because that body is a safe body. It's a nourished body. It's a regulated body. So I think there's so many pros to this approach. And I know there's a huge emphasis on thyroid health, which obviously aligns with everything we do, and metabolic health. So supporting your metabolism by, you know, eating nourishing carbs in the correct amounts. Again, so many people are so afraid of carbs. So this is a really great approach to not be so afraid of carbs anymore. And then we'll talk about the nuance with that when it comes to this population, because I think that's where a little bit of the nuance gets lost. But other, you know, really important nutrients to support thyroid hormone conversion, like saturated fats, coconut oil, ghee, and just eating enough. That's like the biggest thing that I really love about pro-metabolic, is like eating enough nutrient dense foods, focusing on root veggies and shellfish and fruit and organ meats and all these amazing mineral rich foods. And there is kind of a, you know, especially when it comes to those, the people who have insulin resistance, that's really kind of due to stress and all these like stress hormones floating around in their body. I think it can be supportive for blood sugar balance, because a lot of the times people are getting these crazy blood sugar roller coasters because they're not feeding themselves properly and they're not eating frequently enough. And so that kind of emphasis on frequent meals, balanced meals frequently throughout the day to avoid those blood sugar dips and spikes that are induced, you know, by stress and cortisol, that could be also a really helpful thing to work on if that's where you're coming from. So there's a lot of great things about this approach to eating.
Yeah. And it's just want to say, because we didn't mention Ray Pete, who, like, rest in peace, Dr. Ray Pete, man. He really created the pro-metabolic movement. And Kate Deering, I would say, is the other kind of big, she kind of took all Ray's work and condensed it down into a really great book. I think it's called Heal Your Metabolism. I read that 80 million years ago. I like don't remember the title, but Kate Deering is her name. And she kind of took his work, condensed it down and made it digestible, because his any article he's ever written is so dense. You're kind of like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And that was, it was the start of, I look at it as like a movement, and it's really is like, we're going to stop under eating. We're going to stop wanting to be like super skinny. We're going to start caring about feeling really good during your luteal phase, having a good ovulation, making enough progesterone. He was definitely the one that I feel like in the functional space, the focus is always on like estrogen dominance. We got to take DIM. We got to take everything to lower estrogen. And he took another angle of just promoting, like, it's not estrogen that's the issue. It's progesterone. And the whole point is that because we're under eating, we're too stressed, we're always in fight or flight, and not most women have like thyroid dysfunction, even if it's subclinical. Like, so maybe your labs are like normal, they're not terrible, but they're not optimal. Then improving all of those things helps to actually support your thyroid function, making plenty of progesterone so it balances out your estrogen, makes you fertile, can have healthy pregnancies postpartum, go through menopause without a bunch of symptoms. That was kind of like what I feel like the movement was. And I think so many women gravitated towards that. Like I definitely did, because I came from tons of like just food obsession and restriction. And it definitely did help heal a big piece of, like, you think you're healed and then you go through this whole process again and you're like, no, I definitely needed a little bit more. And so I hold it like so near and dear to my heart. I still consider myself like pro-metabolic in so many ways. I just think that, you know, the longer you do this work, and I've talked to a lot of other people in the space, and they call it bioenergetics now, which I think I'm like, okay, are we like rebranding pro-metabolic? I don't know. I like the original, I like the roots, and I like what it stood for. And I think it helped a lot of women. Also, when you have a movement like this get so big and popular online, so many things get taken out of context. And it's like, I also look at it as like, this is a place to begin to heal. It's therapeutic, right? Eating more frequently, eating more nutrient-dense foods, adding in carbs, approaching your health in a completely way. It's therapeutic. But sometimes it doesn't mean we always have to like stay there eating every few hours, you know, and like even like learning more about your cycle and like when maybe in your luteal phase that makes more sense, but not really in your follicular phase. So pro-metabolic, I think, is it's so supported, but I think a lot has gotten taken out of context. And then because it got so big and there's so many pro-metabolic accounts popping up, and they're all kind of saying different things, it's confusing. And it's like, oh, I'm pro-metabolic, so I'm going to like just start eating like a ton more sugar, because it's like we shouldn't be afraid of sugar. It's like, yes, but also like we don't need to eat in excessive amounts. And if you actually look like at like a lot of what the people in the space were eating, it wasn't, they weren't just eating sugar all day. They were eating very nutrient dense foods all day. So I think that's kind of like the biggest thing. We're not bashing pro-metabolic. I still consider myself pro-metabolic, bioenergetics, whatever you want to call it. I like to eat nourishing foods, and I want women to not be constantly underfed and in a state of fight or flight. Like, you know, it's safety regulation. Like you said in the beginning, I'm like, yes, like I want women to be regulated and nourished. And I think that's what it does. I think that when it comes to what pro-metabolic is not and what often gets taken out of context is that it's not like this free pass to eat as much sugar as you want. And a lot of what Kate talks about in her book and Ray, they're always talking about like the N equals one. You're your own experiment. You have to figure out what is best for you. Like, here are some principles, and then kind of like go have fun. It's like, that's always the vibe that I got. And it's also like just important to consider we don't need to like overeat, you know, that I just think people are like, okay, I'm gonna eat a ton of sugar. I'm gonna eat a lot more food because I need more calories to support my body. Cause people started to realize, you know, maybe I feel like even I talk about in my Master Minerals course, like the total daily energy expenditure. And I go through like how to assess your nutrition needs. And so many times people are like, this is so much more food than I thought that I was going to need to eat. And it's not that if we're not there right now, that's okay. We don't have to immediately jump to that. But I would say like the biggest mistakes I would see people make is that they would go from like no carbs or eating very low carb to then like eating a ton of more carbohydrates, more sugar, potatoes. And it's like, listen, those are not bad foods. And I love carbs. If I could never not eat carbs, but it's like finding the right balance for your body. And it, again, most women would start to feel better pretty quickly because they would be fed, right? It's like, it's crazy how many of your symptoms go away when you start eating enough food. Wild.
You're like, I don't have a headache anymore every day. Wow.
I have energy. I'm not fatigued all the time. I could do workouts. I just think it's like people kind of took like, okay, we're going to like roots and fruits, meat, lots of dairy, organ meats, you know, oysters, certain seafood, like all like those super nutrient dense foods. And they're like, I'm only going to eat these. And then also the other big thing I see, and I talk about this in a few lessons in my course, is they stop working out. I don't know if you've seen that a ton, but it's like, well, I don't want stress hormones. I don't want cortisol. So I'm also not going to train. And that combination is typically for some people, again, I'm telling you, I've had so many clients that are like, it truly healed me and it changed me in a way like that nothing else has. I also think that's probably for, especially with PCOS, because I have seen a lot of women in PCOS talk about prometabolic. And this is why a big part of the reason why I wanted to make this episode is because it's like, well, how come it didn't work for me? That's what I hear. I get that question a lot. I tried prometabolic. I gained a ton of weight, even though I was already overweight. How come it did not work for me? And I think a lot of it is just because things get taken out of context, eating too much food too quickly. And there's just like a lot of gray area that we'll definitely get into.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, again, like women like to, this was me for so long, just have rules and then they like attach themselves to those rules and they kind of lose that connection with their body. So it's like, I'm doing all the rules. Why isn't it working? But they don't feel that like, hey, maybe this one thing that I should be doing doesn't actually work for my body. And so there's, again, that gray area where not every single thing that this movement is about might work for you and your body in this stage of life. Because like you said, it is therapeutic. And I look back to like 5 years ago, I don't eat the same way 5 years ago. Do you? Like, it's so like the way that we eat and the way that we support ourselves and nourish ourselves and the supplements we take, everything we do, it changes throughout our lives. And so it can be really helpful for a season, like the exact thing that you're talking about of like eating really frequently. And then sometimes that might not work for you as well, depending on what your goals are, where you're at. And like you said, the sedentary thing with like stopping workouts. When you eat more carbs, the goal is that you have more energy to work out and to move your body and to not be sedentary all day. And so I do see that combination a lot. And that's when I see a lot of my clients with PCOS especially not feel as good, and they start to feel worse, is that they have stopped, you know, exercising, or they're not consistent and they're doing a lot more carbs than maybe they used to. And maybe they did it really quickly, like you said, and then they start to get even, you know, gain even more weight that they didn't necessarily need, or they start feeling worse, like their energy is worse. They start feeling blood sugar spikes, like tired after meals, things like that. And I think that's where certain things could be tweaked to make it more supportive, which I think is a good segue to talk about kind of some gray area, some nuance with our PCOS clients.
Yeah, I think some of the biggest things that we see is that, well, I do also want to mention that there's no like formal macro recommendation with prometabolic as well. I think this is like, and I think that there's no perfect macro breakdown, honestly, for anyone. That it's just so in season of life. I mean, I just think about how much that shifted for me when I was like in the pregnant and postpartum season, like breastfeeding. I'm like, it's completely different than how I was eating before, you know, like what supports you now. So it's one of those things where I tend to see people eating like way more carbohydrate and like not eating a protein. And it's like, okay, but that is not going to help balance too much. So I think like if you look at Kate Deering, a lot of what she recommends, a lot of what Ray Pete recommended in the beginning, at its core, I always thought it's funny because people would come to me being like, I'm pro-metabolic and I look at their food. I'm like, doesn't feel like it. But like, it was definitely more like high protein, high carb, lower fat was kind of their take on it and like what they would recommend. And what I would often see is women eating a lot of fat, a lot of carb, and not enough protein. And I think this is the downfall for most women where they're like, I'm eating more nourishing foods, but a lot of women undereat protein anyway. So this is, it's easy to do. And this is why it's like, you can't try to put everything in a box. You have to experiment and see what works for you. I think what women are often like, okay, well then if I want to eat lower fat, like what do I do? Or should I eat lower fat or higher fat, moderate carb? I just think it's easier to look at what your preferences are and experiment from there. Like if you prefer more higher fat foods, like you're like, I don't want all my dairy to be lower fat. I don't want all my meat to be lower fat. Like it's just not how you want to create and craft your meals. Then maybe you just eat how you kind of naturally would want to eat. Make sure you're eating enough protein and lower the carb intake a little bit, because you can't eat high everything, because then you're going to be eating way too many calories and too much energy intake, and that will lead to the weight gain. And this is like, we're also thinking more specific to our population that of PCOS clients, that they are already overweight entering their healing journey. So they're not someone that like is underweight and needs to gain weight. That's like the big delineation that I want to just make super clear here. And like eating more frequently is often very recommended. And again, I think in the beginning, it can be helpful even for women with PCOS because they often don't make enough digestive juices. So it's easy to under eat because you get full easily at the meals. You often don't want to finish. And so I have had many clients where like they eat more frequently to start. And then once we improve their digestion, I'm like, all right, we're going to move to bigger meals and a little less frequent, especially because that if you are already overweight, eating so frequently can impact the hormone called leptin. And we're going to cover that in great detail in the bonus episode. And that can worsen a lot of PCOS symptoms. And then vegetables. Do you want to talk about the nuance of vegetables?
Erin and I, the other nutritionists on our team, always talk about like, we all have like one thing. Like I feel like Erin would always joke, like you're the fiber dietitian. Like you love vegetables. I love vegetables. But you know, in our clients with this history of like being in the pro-metabolic space, I noticed that they don't eat any vegetables. And that is kind of one of the things that I think got lost when pro-metabolic got really big. It was like, eat all this sugar, eat all these carbs, and no vegetables or fiber allowed. And I just don't think that's going to be supportive for most women. And so I understand that like one of the goals is to eat foods that are easy to digest and absorb when it comes to, you know, this pro-metabolic movement, which is why the recommendation is like avoid most raw veggies and avoid, you know, a lot of fiber, hard to digest foods. But A, you can cook your veggies and make them easier to digest. But B, a lot of these clients have low beneficial bacteria. They have, they're constipated or they have poor bile flow. They have all these different other things kind of speaking to me where I'm like, this person needs a little bit more fiber. They have high estrogen. And so we need fiber-rich foods to bind and support this estrogen detox. And so that's where the, again, nuance gets lost. I think that vegetables and fiber in general, like beans are another one. And I'll let you talk about beans a little more too, because I know you love your beans. I love my beans too. But again, like that's another food that I feel like a lot of women who are in that, coming from that pro-metabolic space are afraid to eat because they've been told that beans are not, they're not good for you. They're not easy to digest. There's too much fiber. Yada, yada. And that's something where these foods can actually be really supportive for especially our clients with PCOS, especially when we have, you know, low beneficial bacteria. I often see such poor diversity in the beneficial bacteria of, you know, these clients' microbiomes, and especially when they come from a place of eating this way. And one of the biggest things you can do to support those beneficials is to feed them with the prebiotic fibers that they need to thrive on. And then you produce more butyrate and that becomes more anti-inflammatory and that improves your insulin sensitivity. And so that's another kind of myth, I guess, I want to debunk, is that fiber is not bad. Vegetables are not bad. If you do have a hard time digesting vegetables, you can cook them. You can eat easier to digest vegetables. Like I don't recommend eating a ton of broccoli and cauliflower and cruciferous vegetables right off the bat if you can't digest them. But there's things that you can do that make them easier to digest, or just choosing the easier to digest veggies and beans too. Like there's ways you can cook them to make them easier to digest. You can go super, I always recommend going really slowly with fiber in the beginning if you're not eating a lot of fiber or if you need a bit more, because it can be hard to digest and lead to more bloating, gas, whatever it is, if you do go too quickly or if you do, you know, add a ton of different sources at once. So slow and steady wins the race with that. But I definitely think there's a place for fiber and vegetables in the diet.
Yes. And you have to think of, because I'm like, it's a very specific person that I think often does well with all these, putting all these things in place. And it's like, that's why a lot of women with PCOS are like, no, I did see a huge improvement with prometabolic. And we're not bashing it. It's just the amount that I've gotten this question is, especially like core students, I've gotten a lot of questions about it of like, do you still support prometabolic? And, you know, because now there's this whole wave of like quantum health and that sort of thing coming over. And they're like, prometabolic makes everyone leptin resistant. And I'm just like, guys, there's more nuance to this. And like I have always said, we have to avoid extremes. If you can avoid extremes with your nutrition, then you're going to avoid a lot of issues down the road. And sometimes there's always a place for extremes. Like I've had some clients that like they could not digest anything. Their health was so bad. They went carnivore and it improved a lot of their symptoms. And then they're like, I can't live this way anymore. So can you help me improve my digestion and gut health so that I can eat all the foods? And I think that's the ultimate goal, right? Like I remember so many of my clients that were like introducing prometabolic principles. And they're like, it's just so free. That's very freeing to be like, a lot of these foods make me feel terrible, like vegetables. And especially just, I think women overeat raw veggies, like the like giant salads and things like that. Like, I think that those are definitely overdone for sure. And if you don't have good digestion, you're not going to break down that food well, and you're going to be bloated and not feel good. So again, it's like, that's a positive. I've also had plenty of clients who are like, we removed a lot of fiber rich foods because they weren't breaking it down well, but they're also doing like a ton of bone broth and things. Like it was therapeutic and it was short term. So I think that's the thing that people are missing, that it's like, you can introduce things, use this approach therapeutically, but then like when we zoom out and look at our health long term, having fiber in is important. Like you need to eat some fiber. I don't think that you should. Like, I think that it's a myth that like you should, if you're constipated, it means that you need more fiber. There's so much more to constipation. Like we've been talking about bile and stuff, and minerals are huge for constipation. But ultimately it's like, if you are someone that tried a prometabolic approach, bioenergetics, whatever you want to call it, and you're like, you know, I saw an improvement in a lot of my symptoms, but I gained a bunch of weight. And now I'm kind of like trying to undo that. Or if you're just, maybe you didn't see an improvement in your symptoms, or maybe it completely worked for you, whichever realm you kind of fall into, especially if it didn't work for you, I'd challenge you to think about like, did it work for a time and it got me to a certain place, and now I need to like adjust based on the progress that I've seen and maybe dig into other areas? Cause sometimes it's like, it gets you so far and then you have a deeper imbalance that you got to fix. You know, like if you can't eat fiber, to me, that makes me want like think, why is your digestion not good enough for that? Right. And again, it's supposed to support your thyroid, which supports digestive juices. But if you have like an iodine deficiency or a really big mineral imbalance, or you're depleted across the board, sometimes you need additional support to like truly rebalance and like fix all the different systems in the body. So I think it can be very helpful, but this is definitely, women that have PCOS or insulin resistance or already overweight to begin with, and then they try to implement it, they gain more weight and they're like, but they really believe in the movement, which I do too. I really do. They don't want to be in fight or flight. They don't want to underfeed themselves. They just want to do what's right and support their bodies and really nourish themselves. But maybe they're like, now I feel like it's not working. It could be because you need a little bit more self-experimentation and nuance. Like, experiment with your macros, actually track your food and see what you're eating. We really like the Chronometer app. Oh, well, that's the one I liked. Is it Which one do you use?
Yeah, that's the one that I always recommend clients use too.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's just like also looking at like, maybe eating too frequently is part of it. We've literally had clients not change their food intake that much and they just switch to bigger meals. And that alone makes a huge difference. So it really is like kind of going back to the roots of like, I think Ray Peet's work. And again, this is my interpretation, but of how he really did believe in that like N equals one experiment and to like truly find what works for you. I think that's like what a lot of people were missing. And if we go back to the origination of it, that's when you can figure out like, okay, I'm going to actually make this work for me instead of just giving myself this like arbitrary list of food rules and being like, I have to do this or I'm bad or I'm not pro-metabolic or whatever you want to kind of like classify it as. Is there anything else that you would like advice that you would give for someone that maybe falls into that category of feeling like it didn't work for them?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on this, but I think the underlying principles of wanting to feel nourished and well-fed and have, you know, support your adrenals, have optimal thyroid health, produce enough progesterone, those are goals. And there's a million ways to get to those goals. And you can do all of that and have it look a little different for you, like you're saying, because everyone's body is so different. So if you are someone who kind of took the exact approach that we were outlining earlier and had been eating like, you know, a lot of sugar and went from under eating maybe to eating like 6 to 8 times a day. And let's say it served you for a time in your journey. And now you're looking for a different way to support yourself and reach those same goals. I think it's just important to know that there is a way to do that that doesn't look the same as it does for maybe all these people on Instagram or, you know, the podcast you're listening to. And I think that's why I like the way that we're kind of talking about this in our approach is that we never really treat two clients as one because everyone's living in a unique body and something that works for someone, you know, client A is not going to work for client B and something that works for you is not going to work for me and vice versa. And it depends on the season of life you're in, which I think we touched on quite a few times and, you know, what your goals are too. So, and even like you said earlier, I think you said this at one point of like where you are in your cycle. I don't eat the same way every single day. Like it's similar, but I adjust and listen to my body. And that took me a long time to learn too on my own journey. Cause I think we're taught that, you know, our bodies are these like machines and these robots and like we have to like give it this input. And, you know, Aaron and I talk about this all the time. And I know you do too. It's like X plus Y doesn't always equal Z when it comes to our bodies. And there's a million different things that affect our health and how we feel. And so it's not always just input equals output. And we aren't robots. We aren't machines in this world where everything's like ChatGPT and AI. It's like easy to think that we are, but we're not. We're humans occupying human bodies and they change and they're different from one another. And that's the beauty of being a human. So if we can kind of lean into that and listen to our bodies and learn to, you know, view our symptoms as feedback, which I know you talk about probably in every podcast episode. And we talk about with our clients all the time. I think that's a good place to be.
And I think that's the biggest takeaway that I hope everyone gets is like, it's not bad. If you look at the roots, it's like, I still recommend all those things. I truly do. Maybe not eating I've never recommended eating every 2 hours. I would always get people that were kind of like, you're not really pro-metabolic. And I'm like, I don't need to fall into a category. And also it's like, health is not a trend. Like you can't look at it that way. It's great to like learn about new approaches, experiment with them and like take what you love and leave what you don't. And I always say that I would say like a lot of my episodes is like, if something that I'm saying does not resonate with you, like please don't force yourself to try to do it because we all have like this deep intuition and a lot of us can't hear it anymore because we've kind of been like ignoring it or trying to like shove it down and not listen to it for so long and we can lose that connection to our bodies. But if you still have that or if you want to work on nourishing that and developing it more, it's going to be like pausing. And like, if you have a bad feeling about something like, yeah, I don't know, that doesn't really like jive with me. I don't think that's going to like fit for me. Don't do it. And listen to that gut instinct because you know your body best. And that's who I think no matter what approach someone follows, that's who the most successful person is health-wise. It's the person that they don't have to follow a specific diet or nutrition approach. Like they're not pro-metabolic, they're not carnivore, they're not quantum, they're not whatever. they're just themselves. They're like, nope, I know what makes me feel good. I know what doesn't. And a lot of the times it's like, maybe they've done some testing and they know, you know what, I need more of this particular nutrient, or I have this imbalance going on in my gut and I'm going to work on that. And so they like, they'll trial therapeutic things, but they're not like hard and fast, like I have to live this way and follow specific rules. It's fluid, which is, I think, the best approach to your health. And especially like when it comes to food, because things are going to change. Like, you're going to have babies. Maybe I feel like most of my population are moms. You're going to have babies. You're probably going to breastfeed. And then eventually you're going to go through menopause and things are going to change again. And your food's going to completely change once again. So we don't have to be like tied to one approach and then feeling like a bum. There's something wrong with me because it didn't work for me, or thinking that there's something wrong with the approach. I mean, there could definitely be things wrong depending on what you're looking at. But overall, I think it's important to practice experimenting for yourself, listening to cues from your body. Like, I never did a lot of sugar. I just like don't do well with it. I do well with some treats, but it's like I cannot overdo it. I've never been that way, or I could. So again, it's like I dove deep into pro-metabolic, but I was like, this doesn't feel right for me. So I'm not going to like lean into this. Same thing with eating every 2 hours. If people that know me in real life, I eat huge meals, like massive meals. And so it's like, I would be starving if I ate tiny meals every couple hours. The only time I ever did that was my first trimester of my pregnancies, and that's it. So it's, again, like it didn't work for me. So you just have to experiment and find what works for you and kind of trust that information from your body. But we're going to wrap up because we have to do our bonus episode, and we're going to dig into leptin and PCOS, specifically leptin resistance, and how this is something that a lot of our clients with PCOS deal with, and kind of like, what are the big signs that we see with it? And then we're going to go through some client examples and tips for supporting optimal leptin levels, specifically when you have PCOS. So definitely check out the bonus episode on Patreon, patreon.com/hormonehealingrd, if you guys want to. If you found this episode helpful, the best way to support the show is by leaving a review. It helps more women find this message and feel empowered on their healing journey, or at least that's our goal. And if you want to dive deeper and stay in the loop with everything, make sure you're subscribed to my Feminine Periodical newsletter. It goes out every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And I think that's it. Thank you so much for being here, Ava, and sharing your brain and your time and expertise. And we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.